And this is a very complex topic. And I would refer you to www.amchip.org, the organization for which I work's website. And what I've excerpted for our amuse-bouche this afternoon is just a few slides from a very large slide set that talks about the Affordable Care Act and makes it relevant to maternal and child health programs. And you can find that on our website. And I'll refer to that at the end. AmChip is the national organization that advocates for maternal and child health programs in states. And our primary mission is to support state maternal and child health programs and provide national leadership on issues affecting women and children. And if you don't get AmChip's newsletter and you'd like to, please leave me your card and I'd be happy to sign you up. This is a very fluid time in Washington, and things are changing. And if you'd like to keep abreast specifically of policies related to maternal and child health, we'd be happy to share our analysis with you and be happy to have you join as well. Another booklet that we put out celebrating the 75th anniversary of Title V was passed out to you when you entered the room and we ran out. If you didn't get a copy and you'd like one, just let us know or let Josh Brown in the back. Josh, want to raise your hand? Give him your card or give me your card and we'll send these to you. But this talks a little bit about maternal child health programs today in history. And we have three fact sheets in the back again: what health reform means for adolescents, what health reform means for children and youth with special health care needs, and opportunities to promote medical home through the Affordable Care Act. So it's a couple resources for you as you think about our, we'll get to that one. Think about our talk today. On Tuesday, I want to talk about the implications of the election just briefly. It became very clear that we have a continued need for MCH leadership and a continued need for MCH leaders. If we want to see the legislation and policies to promote the health of women, children, and families, it's not going to be an accident that these things prevail. And that's going to take real concerted advocacy from all of us that are able to do that. And we have to redouble our efforts in light of some real challenges that I think will be evolving literally as we speak, but quite significantly over the next 2 years in particular. Because obviously, the election on Tuesday did reveal that there is an undercurrent of discontent that those of us that live inside the Beltway probably knew about, but may not have may have underestimated its significance. But I think it's important to temper all of the claims that you may have heard about on Wednesday morning. You know, the biggest issue in exit polls was the economy by about 60%. I don't think it really was a referendum on healthcare, which was about 19% of the reason people cast their votes on Tuesday. So there's tremendous opportunity still for us to move the provisions that we care the most about in the Affordable Care Act. I also think it's really important that you go back to your high school civics text and remember that there's a very delicate balance between the Congress and the presidency. And there's not, it's not going to be an easy feat to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And it's not going to be an easy feat to give something to the president that he probably wouldn't agree with anyway. So, I mean, there's certainly in the next 2 years opportunities to continue this work. It is the law of the land and something that we really do have to get to know a lot more about. That said, the folks for whom I work in the states are working for new governors who campaigned against the provisions in this bill, and part of their mental health is going to be compromised by a schizophrenia of having to plan for the possibility that they can't do anything related to the Affordable Care Act, while also knowing that federally there's going to be a tremendous push to implement the Affordable Care Act, and that's going to play out state by state. But let me tell you, the world didn't end, and I think it is appropriate for us as MCH leaders to have unwarranted optimism about the possibilities that are in this legislation. And honestly, this is a very, very significant bill. And it's even more significant that it was passed the year, the 75th anniversary of Title V and the Social Security Act. So we are living through history, and I don't know if this is what it feels like, but if this is what it feels like, this is what it feels like. We need to celebrate because we really did see some historic shifts on March 23rd, where coverage was expanded for 32 million Americans. There were massive insurance reforms, many of which Kathy spoke about, and major new investments in public health and prevention. And by that, I'm not just talking about primary care, although that's very, very important. This is the solution to the workforce shortage. Start getting our kids to do clinical visits. There's some really cool pieces in the legislation around access to care that I think we should be very excited about, and recognize that 9 million children are covered in this bill. Additional children are covered in this bill, as well as 12 million women of reproductive age. And there are major insurance reforms related to children with special health care needs. I think it's important to note that the bill doesn't do a lot of specific spelling out of benefits. That's going to evolve, as Kathy mentioned. And particularly, we need to keep the children and youth with special health care needs piece of this in front, because it's a complicated population, and most of those kids have insurance now. It's a matter of underinsurance for that population. And that's going to continue to be a major issue. It may, in fact, get worse under the Affordable Care Act if more kids are kicked out of Medicaid and put into exchanges where the benefits packages may not be as comprehensive. So that's something that we really, really do need to pay attention to. And it strengthens coverage for clinical preventive services, which we know are very important. I'm not going to get into a lot of these, but I am going to let you know that Affordable Care Act is a wonderful bill around women's health. It authorizes a Bright Futures for Women, which the Institute of Medicine is working on with HRSA to define standards for prenatal care for women, just like we've done for kids through the Bright Futures for Children, with AAP leadership and support of the Maternal and Child Health Bureau. So we should pay attention to the opportunities in this bill to promote the health of women, which we know healthy women have healthy children, which lead to healthy families. And it is a bill that supports that perspective in a lifespan and a preconception way, and we can talk a little bit more about that. One of the most significant pieces of this bill, when you look at the clinical care, is the comprehensive tobacco cessation services for pregnant women on Medicaid, which wasn't covered prior to this. And we know that's a huge predictor of prematurity and poor outcomes for women. And the option for states to cover family planning services without a waiver, which is a big pain in the neck now. But we can talk more about that, but I want to talk a little bit about the provisions related to family health and then public health. We're really proud of the bill recognizing Title V as a locus for improving maternal and child health, and authorizing and approving mandatory funding, $1.5 billion over 5 years for home visiting. Those of you who are public health students might want to start thinking about your theses on evaluating home visiting programs, because we're going to need a lot of people to evaluate these evidence, you know, using evidence to evaluate home visitation programs. But there'll be massive amounts of dissertation work on this, because the states are required to use evidence in their selection of home visitation models. And it's a massive undertaking, I think, for states to think about all that research. And the guidance for these programs has yet to be released. But incredible opportunity here. $1.5 billion through a home visiting program going to the Maternal and Child Health Bureau and then to states to implement. But there's also great opportunities in ACA for improving adolescent health through a program called Personal Responsibility Education, which funds teen pregnancy prevention, positive youth development work. There was restoration of funding for abstinence education. We won't spend a lot of time on that, talking about evidence base. But there were also provisions related to a new program around postpartum depression counseling, expansion of school-based health centers. Now that this provided funding for construction, not operation. And some incredible new provision related to reasonable break time for nursing moms. So a provision that requires employers, large employers, provide reasonable break time for nursing moms, which we don't have now. We know that that's incredibly important. There's a pregnancy assistance fund in the ACA to support parenting teens, $125 million appropriation over 5 years. The continuity of coverage that Kathy talked a bit about and the preventive benefits in the packages that will be rolled out, hopefully, and I think it will, provide real opportunity to strengthen women's health over the life course and improve birth outcomes if women choose to have kids. Massive new expansion of community health centers. I won't spend a lot of time on that, but $11 billion to expand the community health center program is in this bill, and a real opportunity then to integrate maternal and child health, clinical care, and public health within states and local areas. Obviously, a lot of challenges. Are states going to be able to afford a 1% match if they had to? We know that that's tough times right now. And then again, going back to civics, there are many provisions of this bill that are authorized but not appropriated, and that has to go through the annual appropriations process. And given the context in Washington right now, I think, honestly, the opportunity for us to get a new dollar outside of the Affordable Care Act for any discretionary program is going to be very, very, very difficult, if not impossible. And a lot of the things that we care a lot about, especially the workforce provisions of ACA, were not funded. So it's really going to be a heavy lift in the next couple years for appropriations for some of those things that we care a lot about. And I would really hope that you don't think someone else is going to do this for you. We really, really need you to help lift, because even 5-10 calls to a congressional member can make a huge difference if we move us all forward. So please pay attention to the stuff that APHA sends out, that we send out, because we really, really need help carrying this message forward. All this being said in the context of lawsuits to repeal ACA at the state level, and a lot of public confusion. I'm going to just talk about the Public Health and Prevention Fund, which is a mandatory $7 billion program over 5 years to invest in public health at the state and community level. It's a wonderful opportunity for us, and it's very, very vulnerable right now because of the context around cuts and the notion that the stuff that's funded in the Public Health and Prevention Fund is extra, or things that aren't really essential to improving health. We all know that's a penny-wise, pound-foolish approach to take, that the kinds of things that we do at the state and local level around public health and prevention actually are cost savings, but we don't see those savings in the five-year window that the Congressional Budget Office cares the most about. So what's in this Public Health and Prevention Fund? Well, a lot of money, and we're currently in the FY10 cycle with $500 million. Set aside for funds, and looking, if we ever get an FY11 budget, which we will hopefully, new investments, increased investments in the fund. And again, all of these slides are on our website. This year, half of that money was used for primary care workforce programs. Half of it went to train new primary care providers, and we can quibble about whether that's public health or not. It happened. I think it was a recognition that many of the provisions related to workforce in the Affordable Care Act weren't funded, and this was an opportunity for the administration to do that. There's a number of smaller lines in that fund to do the kind of work that we care about: health promotion, tobacco cessation, obesity prevention, physical activity and nutrition. A lot of it's focused on chronic disease prevention, which we know, as you go downstream or go upstream, preventing chronic disease saves a lot downstream. There was a recognition of the need to strengthen public health infrastructure at the state and local level. So this year, there's $70 million set aside for public health infrastructure. Those of you working in state health departments will see this coming through, both directly to your lab, for one example, but also to health promotion, other disease prevention programs that you have at the state level. Money for training, research, and then again, you can't have a federal legislation like this without a bunch of new advisory committees. There's a whole new National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council that's been formed. It's being organized by the Surgeon General, and she's looking for comments as we speak. A number of new demonstration projects, especially around childhood obesity, oral health, and certainly something that I think is important to all of us who are adopting this new life course approach. There is authorized prevention and health promotion and outreach and education campaign to raise public awareness of health improvement across the lifespan. So there are real opportunities, again, in ACA to move forward this life course perspective that we've been hearing so much about in MCH over the past couple years. But the long term, again, really is up to us. I don't, again, think that there's reason for us to say the sky's falling with regards to what happened in the change in Congress, but there is going to be an increased need for us to push forward what we care the most about. And as I mentioned when I started, it's going to be no accident that these provisions and that this act stays intact. We have to be very concerted in efforts to support the things that we care the most about, whether that's through direct lobbying or through education and informing the folks that are making these decisions. So with that, I hope we do have a lot of time for questions, because I'm sure you have many, and I'll turn it over to Judy, who can do a great job talking more about what's in ACA and opportunities for health reform.